911 emergency, what are you reporting?
You're listening to another great episode of We Speak Dispatch, sponsored by our friends at Watson.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another great episode of We Speak Dispatch. And yes, I'm wearing glasses today. Holy cow, I know. I forgot to take them off before we started filming. But welcome back. We're going to have a great show today. We got a super guest that we just met the other day, and she's going to offer some information about how to be fully staffed and make your crew actually kind of happy, which is cool out there. So today we're joined by John and Joe. Both of them are eager to ask questions, I can tell.
Tennessee over here.
And our special guest today is Carrie. Carrie, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I am the communications manager for a 911 center that dispatches for fire and medical. We are located in Central Florida, just north of Orlando, if you're familiar with the area.
Nice, nice. And tell us about your comm center. It's how many people are there? And
we have four shifts that are each made up of approximately 7 to 8 operators at a time. So we staff approximately 36 employees at any given time. We are a secondary answering point. So our calls are originally answered by the sheriff's office and then transferred over to us if they're in need of fire or medical.
Okay. Wow. That's good. And how many openings do you have right now?
We have no openings. We are in the process of securing 2 overhires, but those are overhire positions. We have no openings. And we have run, knock on wood, pretty close to fully staffed for about 14 months.
And how long have you actually been there?
I've been there for a little over a year and a half.
Wow. Okay. So now you got to tell us the secret of, coming into a place. When you came into that place, was it fully staffed?
It was not fully staffed. They were not by any means a struggling communications center, though I believe they had about 6 vacancies at the time, and they were running about 6 to 8 resignations per year. We're running about 4 resignations per year right now. So definitely I'm proud of an improvement, but I would by no means say it was a struggling center to begin with.
Okay. Wow.
So we hear full staff, and sometimes that's by the numbers, but that doesn't always meet the volume. So when you have 36 and you're center fully staffed on paper with 0 openings, is it still hard to answer calls and dispatch calls because of the volume?
So we do answer about 130,000 calls per year. Ideally, I would like to have an extra 4 positions staffed with us full time. Ideally, I do think we are in need of that increase. However, we do meet all of our ISO and accreditation standards. We meet all of our state standards for answering times. So we're making it happen. Ideally, I would prefer 1 extra person on every shift to help with days off, breaks, call outs.
How long is your training program? So you got these employees, you're a secondary answering point. Talk about how long does it take from, just start from the beginning. You post the position, how long does it take to get them in the door? And then after they're in the door, how long does it take till they actually count as a body?
So once we post, we usually have them interviewed within about 2 to 3 weeks after that posting closes. We usually have them onboarded in about another 3 to 4 weeks after that. We try to space out our academies appropriately so that our CTOs are not overwhelmed. We try to give them a break in between. So we have them onboarded within about 2 months of them originally applying. We're trying to shorten that time, but that's where we are right now. They do a classroom training for approximately 6 weeks where they're learning geography, they're learning our CAD system, our policies and guidelines, and then they hit the floor with the trainer and they are paired up with that trainer for about another 6 weeks. And then they're released on their own to phones only. They remain on phones for a couple of months until their supervisor feels they are ready to move on to that first radio training position. We have 2 radio positions to train for. We try to have them through all the tiers, the call taking and the 2 radio positions within about 12 to 15 months.
Wow. And you mean tiers like T-I-E-R-S, right? Not tiers like, oh my God.
A little of both, honestly. But yeah, we try to have them signed off and get them going because we want to start encouraging them to move on. Once they're signed off on that last radio position, they can move on to, are they appropriate to become a certified training officer? Are they appropriate to start learning what goes into the supervisory skills? So we try to have them through that in about 15 months.
And the academy includes learning the protocol?
Yes, it includes emergency medical dispatch, emergency fire dispatch, studying for those. We are in Florida, so we do have the state exam that they have to study for. So it gets them ready for all of those things. It introduces them to our guidelines, but by no means do we go through them verbatim, word for word. We save that more for once they're on the floor, but they have a great understanding of our CAD system, of our computer system, maps. We use LiveMum for dispatching, so they're introduced to it, but not learning it in its entirety.
Mm. Do you guys teach the protocols at your place, or do you send them to some academy or something?
You met Sharon Owens when you were visiting with us, and she's our training coordinator. She teaches that in-house for us. She is also an APCO certified instructor, so she's able to instruct the classes on site.
Wow, look at that. And this Florida testing you got to do, is that like, does every agency have to send somebody through this Florida process thing?
They do. They have to become a certified public safety telecommunicator. There is an exam that they study for, and they have to pass. And they review that every 2 years.
Okay.
Oh my God. They got to read
that. How long is that Florida state required class? How long is that?
I do not remember the hours offhand, but they do have to get an 80% on the exam. And it covers a lot of the historical parts of how 911 came to be what it is today, the policies that went into it, those first phone calls that were made. It covers an extensive amount of information. I believe our state certified class is 280 hours in total.
So this almost sounds like the EMP test. It's like, you got to know historical stuff and how 911 works. I mean, for a person that's going to do fire dispatch, do they have to do any law enforcement type stuff on that test?
There is nothing specific to law enforcement on that test that you wouldn't know from studying in the Fire and Rescue Center. We would get you completely prepared for everything you need, all study material, practice material. You would not be left out to dry.
Yeah.
One of the things I've always wondered when there's a secondary answering point is, say there's a major event that goes through your area, and does the sheriff's office or whatever that transfers the calls to you, are they able to come staff you guys if you have a major emergency, or can you guys go staff the sheriff's office if they have a major emergency so that they could maybe do a debriefing of some kind, or are you guys completely, utterly separate?
Completely and utterly separate. I think in some regions that would be possible when they're on the same computer system. We are not on the same CAD system. So it would be more of an impedance than anything.
Mm. Yep. Makes sense. Are you on the same phone system?
Yeah. I was gonna say, same phone system. Can you see their CAD though? You can't. They can't. So it's shut off.
Yeah, we are in completely separate rooms, completely different CAD systems, and law enforcement is heavy in the TIN codes and signals, so anybody coming from the fire side would even struggle to keep up with what is going on the radio and that sort of traffic.
Well, fire just likes acronyms, DOA.
Yes.
Wow. What an acronym.
I'm going right there.
Is that Department of Air Aviation? Is that what that is? No.
Yeah, it is. In Florida, that's what it stands for.
And Kerry, how many fire departments do you guys dispatch for? Is it just one, like whatever agency you work for, it's that fire department, or are there many that they dispatch for?
So we dispatch for the county fire department, and we also dispatch for the cities in our county as well. We have four cities that we dispatch for.
Wow. And the county.
And the county.
Does everybody have the same exact guidelines, protocols, all that stuff?
They don't have the same exact guidelines or protocols, but we do work cohesively with the cities to get it as close as possible. And when we do notice there's an area that there's a gap, we try to communicate when we can and get everybody on the same page and close those gaps, because that's what makes it easier for communications. We can't remember that this city wants this and that city wants this. So luckily, we have great rapport with our cities. We have great communication with them. We meet monthly with them, and we're able to talk those things out and get it as close as we can.
Okay. Do you guys dispatch the initial call with your voice or a computerized voice? A lot of fire departments are going to that initial computerized voice. And if you use the computerized voice, do you have a name for it?
Oh, we do use the computerized voice. I will not put the name out today, but we do use computerized voice.
Voice change between male and female?
It does not change.
It does not. Okay. Some agencies do that. You can do that.
Really? And all of our dispatch. And all of our dispatchers do fully know how to dispatch when that system is not in place for any reason. They can still pull that skill out of their back pocket when they need it.
Not ours was the name is.
ours was Samantha, Doug. So I'll answer Samantha. It. Ours was Samantha.
I love
Batman.
No idea.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's
yeah. So we talk a lot about training and jurisdiction here. Do you do stay interviews? That's kind of a big thing on social media to find out, you know, if you're fully staffed. And first of all, how long have you been fully staffed? Number one, if you answer that, I forgot. And then like all 36 filled. And number two, do you have, or have you over the last year and a half since you took over, employed stay interviews to find out why people are staying and other agencies around you may be picking your brain as well?
So about a year ago, I did do one-on-one interviews with each one of our team members, and it was a great opportunity to see what they felt like they needed from their department, to see what they felt like was working and was not working. And it was wonderful feedback. I have not followed up with that again because there's a couple of places that I want to be before we follow up again. I feel like when you do those one-on-one interviews, they need to be from a very genuine spot, and you have to have the time dedicated to do the follow-up work that comes with them. So it would be interesting to come in a year later and see if they feel like there has been an improvement or if they feel like it has stayed the same. So we do those one-on-one interviews. We also get a lot of feedback from our team throughout the year. They have a voice in several areas throughout the year to voice concerns or wants for changes, and be informed of what's going on.
Interesting.
And how long have you had the 36 filled?
We have been close to fully staffed since November of 2022.
Okay. Wow. It's been a minute. Okay. It's not like last week we hired and filled our last.
Yeah, we're ready now.
And we've had a turnover here or there throughout that time, but nothing significant, one or two here or there. I think in total, we had 4 resignations last year and 1 transfer.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's nice. So that in about a year, when we contact you to come back on here, you'll be like, oh, I don't work there no more.
your retention rate is like 88%. I mean, conversely, your loss rate is 12%. I mean, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay. So many agencies we visit are short, and it creates morale problems and people get upset, and it's like mandatory overtime. Do you guys have mandatory overtime?
We do not, and we have not.
God. Wow. That's crazy. So many places. Yeah, do you have voluntary overtime?
We have voluntary overtime. Okay. If somebody is taking PTO, they can sign up. We do try to create a lunch shift overtime where they can sign up for a 5-hour period to cover those lunch breaks. So there is definitely voluntary overtime. And somebody is on call each day and each shift in case there is a call out and we're going to be below staffing. We know who's expected to be called in.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I've heard about this before. So when you get somebody that's on call, like let's say on call on Thursday, does that mean on Thursday they have to be home and not drinking? And is there like restrictions on that?
They have to be not drinking. That is a definite. And they have to be able to respond into work within 45 minutes. Wow, so they have to be home, but they have to be able to respond into work.
And are they 45 minutes? Are they compensated for being on call?
Yes, they are. They're compensated for their time being on call.
So there's that. There goes, you know, a lot of agencies right here say, oh, yeah, we have an on-call program. And then, you know, if I call, you're expected to come in, but I'm not being compensated to be on call. And that's a problem.
We had that issue. We tried to do that, and it was like, we won't do it unless we get paid for it. And it was like, well, what's the point? We'll just bring some people in for overtime. So it just, you know, that's why it makes me curious about your situation there, that was, you guys are doing that. But that's pretty cool that they, you know, the 45-minute thing, I think, is a bit crazy. I'm hoping everybody lives very close to your place, very close.
Yeah, and that's 45 minutes from the time that they got the phone call. So sometimes it takes them a little bit of time to call back in, but they are required to be in.
Wow, look at that. Nice. Oh. All right. That's good. What kind of when you did have to recruit people, did you have to do it yourself, or do you have like an HR department that does your recruiting and all that stuff and hiring? And do you do the interviews, or does somebody else do them?
So for recruiting, we had a recruitment team about a year ago, and they would go, and the recruitment team is made up of dispatchers and call takers. they would go to high schools and recruit at some of those events. They would go to community events. We ultimately disbanded that recruitment team a couple of months ago because I want all the operators and dispatchers to feel that they are responsible for recruitment. It's not the five or six people on this team. It is all of us in this department who's responsible for it. And that so far has worked out really well. They all have recruitment business cards that if they meet somebody out and about in the community, they can hand them a business card and recruit that way. We also work very closely with our PIO to make sure that social media is putting the communication center in an energetic and fun spotlight that if you came across it, you would feel like, I want to work there. That looks like fun. That's a cool experience. So we really tailor those postings to know when we're going to have a job posting open. We'll make sure we're filtering some of our better content through social media. Just for example, we did a waterways training where everyone went out on the boats. We had a great time. We learned about the different docks and the boats that the department has. Wow. And that's a great social media post because who wouldn't want to do that training with us? Yeah. And so right before we have a job posting, we'll filter that one through. And any good events or awards, we always get those going on social media. But our best recruiters are not just our staff, our operators, and our dispatch, but also our city partners that we work with and other people within the agency are always referring friends, family, neighbors. And those have been our best candidates, our best interviews, and our best numbers altogether.
Nice. Wow. Do I get a referral bonus if someone hands someone a card? And I'm scared.
The county does. The county does have an incentive for our employees that brings somebody in. And if that employee remains, they have an incentive.
Holy cow, this is crazy.
Now, in November of 22, did you have an incentive for hiring a hiring bonus to fill those last couple slots?
We have never had a hiring bonus.
Mm. Okay. But you have all these other bonuses in place out there.
The county is very good to us. The county makes sure there's great incentives in place, but we've never done a hiring bonus, and we are not one of the highest paid agencies by any means in our area.
Wow. Well, Carrie, a couple quick questions before we get out of here because we're almost at the end of time here. One is, do you send your folks on ride-alongs out with the fire department?
Yes, we do.
Wow, nice. And the other thing is, okay, so Carrie, you are the center that has all this stuff going for you. What's a piece of advice you could give to some of our viewers that are out there going, we have no way of staff, everybody's miserable. What do you think would be one thing that you could tell them to do?
If I had to focus on one thing that you could fix today with nobody's permission, nobody's funding, and just go start this Monday morning, I would change the way you're disseminating information to your frontline staff. I would almost bet if you have a morale problem in your center that your frontline staff feels they are not getting information timely, they're not getting information at the same time as their peers, and they're having to fish for information. They need to be included in what's going on, they need to have a say, and there needs to be a process for how the information is getting to them.
So not just a blanket email.
I know we're almost out of time, though, but I got to ask a follow-up.
Yes, go.
Yeah, how do you do that besides email? Exactly what you talked about, how do you do that besides email?
One of my number one methods for that is every single supervisory meeting, we document the minutes from those meetings, and those minutes outside of personnel issues are sent out within a shift or two to the entire staff. They get a copy of those meeting minutes every single meeting. Wow. So that they know exactly what was covered, exactly what is being worked on, exactly what is being changed, and they have a say and are engaged in what's going on in the center. And they know what their leadership is doing to support them.
Wow. Now that sounds more like email, yes?
Those go out by email from me, and then the supervisors follow it up with an in-person discussion to make sure there are no questions. And one of my favorite things is usually by the next day, I have an email or two from a shift asking for clarifying information, asking for follow-up information, presenting additional ideas to build on top of what was already presented. And to me, that means that they were engaged, they were paying attention, and they felt like they had a voice, and that's the best part.
Wow. Look at that. I love that kind of thing when we can ask people that are experiencing good things to kind of share that with everybody else, as opposed to people sitting here going, we're short, nobody likes each other, all these things. It's like, well, what do you do about it? How can you fix this kind of a thing? So, I mean, Carrie, I hope if you are interested that if somebody wants to get a hold of you, they can send us an email and we'll send it right back to you. And you can provide some guidance or some help or maybe meet with this person or whatever you want to do out there. But I think it's kind of nice that you have that fully staffed. And really, we had a good time teaching down there. Me and Leslie both had a good time down there with that.
It was great. Everybody enjoyed the training. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Hey, Joe, tell us about our social media. What's going on with that?
I tell you what, we're kicking butt. I mean, when you get right down to it, we're almost in 50 countries and we're nearing 30,000 plays since we started this during COVID. Oh, so if you're not listening to us, make sure you tune in. You can find us on any platform, Facebook, social media, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just not Twitter, whatever, everywhere.
That is great. Well, until next time, everybody, thanks, Kerry, for showing up. John and Joe, appreciate you guys coming by. Until we meet again, folks, go out and make it a great day, because you know we will. Thank you.
Watson Consult is a proud sponsor of the We Speak Dispatch podcast. For more information or to schedule a showroom tour, visit watsonconsoles.com.